The opinions expressed in the Spirited Sports Podcast are individual and are not necessarily representative of Spirit Live or Toronto Metropolitan University. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to Spirited Sports. Toldy Kakaletris, Nick DiCicco, Elias Drakos, and many more break down the biggest moments, game-changing plays, and the stories behind the athletes. Whether you live for the thrill of victory, the hustle of the underdog, or just love a great sports conversation, you're in the right place. This is Spirited Sports.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Spirited Sports. Welcome back for another exciting episode, and we have a packed house today. Toldy, you ready for this episode? We have quite a few guests to speak with today.
Yeah, very much so. Looking forward to it. We got a lot of great conversations here today. We have Todd Ashdua joining us here today, and we also have Anning Zhang joining us as well. And we also have Stephen Lucas in the house. So we got alongside Nick, myself, and Elias here as well. So yeah, we got a lot of great topics here. Nick, start us off.
Yeah, let's start it off in the NHL. Let's start it off with the Winnipeg Jets and a very big milestone for Mark Scheifele becoming the Jets' all-time games played leader. What are our thoughts on this? Stephen, take it away.
Yeah, obviously Mark Scheifele edging himself in Winnipeg Jets history. The Kitchener, Ontario native became the all-time franchise leader in games played with 898 games played for the Winnipeg Jets last Tuesday against the Columbus Blue Jackets, passing longtime teammate and former Winnipeg Jets captain Blake Wheeler. Scheifele was the first player selected by the Jets in their return to Winnipeg from Atlanta when they were the Thrashers. He was taken seventh overall in 2011. Listen, Mark Scheifele is an absolute gamer. This guy bleeds Winnipeg Jets hockey. Teammates and coaches highlight his intense drive to be the best, not just in hockey, but in all aspects, which contributes to his high performance on the ice. Elias, what are your thoughts on Mark Scheifele?
I think this is an incredible achievement, Stephen. I think that, you know, playing all those games for the Jets, and he even said in a quote, "I feel old some days." I mean, he doesn't look old out there, I'll tell you that much. He still looks like, you know, he's in the prime of his career. He's in the best playing days of his life, and he's continuing to prove that game in and game out.
So you guys mentioned 32 years of age. He was selected seventh overall 14 years ago. So 13 years as a full-time NHLer, and it's great to see that him get this achievement because he's quite an integral part of this team.
So here's a question for anybody to answer. Is he on the Olympic team in 26 or no?
Toldy, what do you think?
Put up some really great numbers. And you know, if you think back to 2018-19, where he had the 84-point season, and then if you also want to think about last season, where he actually had the career-high 87-point season, he's just put up great numbers, and, you know, he's been an all-star as well. He's playing two all-star games, 2019-20, so I definitely think he'll, one way or another, crack the lineup. Todd?
Yeah, I got to agree. I think, you know, Scheifele's obviously been a great player for a long time. You mentioned Toldy, the year he had last year was very good. Obviously helped the Jets finish with the best record in the NHL last year. And even this year, too, he's up to 25 points. He's had a really good year so far this year. So, yeah, I feel like he'll have a spot definitely on Team Canada's roster for sure.
I'd have to agree. Now, what are our thoughts on the Jets so far this season? Elias?
I think, you know, the Jets coming into it, they were trying to make a case for the best Canadian team this year, one of the best, you know, kind of fighting with the Leafs, the Oilers and all that. I think they've had a pretty good start to the year. I mean, they're 12-7, 24 points, you know, third in the Central Division. So I like the way they've played so far. I think that there's still more to come for them. I think that they haven't reached their full potential as a team yet this season, but I'd say they're off to a pretty good start.
Now, you look at the stats and their big boys have really stepped it up. You know, Scheifele, as we talked about, 27 points on the year through 19 games, 11 goals, 16 assists. And right behind him is Kyle Connor, 11 goals, 13 assists, 24 points. And even Josh Morrissey, 20-plus points to start the year. Great start for the Jets, I think.
Note they're doing this without Nikolaj Ehlers, who they lost to free agency last summer, too.
Yeah.
Let's take it over to the Edmonton Oilers superstars McDavid and Draisaitl teaming up for their 500th goal. So obviously, 500th goal where they've both directly been involved in the play together. Elias, tell us a little bit more about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's no surprise, guys. McDavid and Draisaitl have been doing this, you know, for quite a while now. Now the Oilers superstars can share rare company with some of the best duos in NHL history. When McDavid assisted on Draisaitl's power play goal in the third period of Wednesday's loss to the Washington Capitals, it was the 500th goal the Oilers stars had both factored in on. According to the NHL, here's a fun one, a fun little stat. They are only the sixth pair of teammates to factor on 500 goals together. The list... they're filled with Hall of Famers, you know, Gretzky and Curry, to name one of them, the Sedin brothers. They're truly making history together.
Can you think of any better modern duo in the NHL right now?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm looking at, you know, some of the other names on this list here. I mean, Nicholas Backstrom and Alex Ovechkin is the only other
one. That was a great duo back then. That was fantastic.
Crack that. Yeah, exactly. So, but no, I mean, right now in the NHL, I don't think there's a better duo. I couldn't name one.
All right. All right. Now, what about Macklin Celebrini joining some high ranks as well?
When he completed his third career hat trick with an overtime goal that gave the Sharks a 3-2 victory over the Utah Mammoth and put Celebrini in elite company. The three goals gave Celebrini 30 points in his team's first 20 games of the season, a mark reached only by two other teenagers in NHL history, with Wayne Gretzky doing it in the 1980-1981 season and Sidney Crosby doing it in the 2006-2007 NHL season. This is pretty incredible what Macklin Celebrini is doing at such a young age on the San Jose Sharks, and a guy who's not even, I'd say, enter his prime yet.
Celebrini had 25 goals and 38 assists as an 18-year-old rookie, but has taken his game to new heights so far this season with 13 goals and 17 assists.
You knew going into this season, or even into last season, that this kid was something special. Something special, and he's elevated his game.
Elias, your thoughts on maybe an Art Ross push here by Celebrini?
Go ahead.
Yeah, this guy is special. I mean, he's very special. And, you know, Vincent Desharnais, who played with Connor McDavid and Sidney Crosby in his career, would agree with me on that. I'm reading his quote here. It says, special, he's special. It says here, I think everyone in this building sees how special he is as a player, as a human being as well. He's not a jerk, it says here, and walking around and saying that he's the best player. So, I mean, you could tell he's humble about it. And I think it also, more importantly, looks to the Sharks' future. They're really building something here with Celebrini and Will Smith and, you know, a young core. I think, like, watch out. In a few years from now, this team is going to be a high-flying team, and they're going to make it to, you know, I think they're going to win some Stanley Cups together.
Nick?
This team, the Sharks that we've seen so far this year, this is something we haven't seen in a while for the Sharks team, a young, hungry core. We've seen in this, the early stages of this rebuild, that they were a veteran team, and, you know, with guys like Celebrini and Will Smith, those two are just doing some really good things.
Taking it from the ice, let's take it to the court now. Let's talk some hoops here. Todd, let's talk about the King. LBJ, take it away.
Yeah, so LeBron James missed the first, I believe, the first basically month of the season with an injury, and he actually made his return to the Lakers lineup, I believe it was on Tuesday, against the Utah Jazz. Helped the Lakers win that one. He had 11 assists in his return to action, and it was just really good to see LeBron back in action for the Lakers. For a team that's been pretty surprising, at least in my opinion, to be one of the best teams in the Western Conference to start off the NBA season. So LeBron's return, combined with Luka Doncic, Austin Reeves, has been playing great as well. It'll be interesting to see how far the Lakers could go when the playoffs come.
Any?
I mean, after 22 seasons... 22 straight seasons as an NBA All-Star is insane, but unfortunately, I think this is last year would be his last time ending up in the All-Star roster. I think he can't do it this year anymore.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah, he's had such an illustrious career.
Curry passed Carter to move to 22nd on the NBA's all-time scoring list. Carter scored 25,728 points over the course of his career. Todd, how many more spots on that list do you think Curry can continue to move up?
Honestly, I could see Curry getting into, I'm going to say, I could see top 10 for Steph. I honestly don't feel like, I'm not too sure about top 5, and part of that honestly kind of has to do with just his injury history, which obviously, like, earlier in his career, he had a lot of injuries, and that kind of contributed to his slow start when he came into the NBA. But I do feel like Steph will be able to get into the comfortably into the top 10. I'm not sure about top 5, though.
So if we look at the numbers here, Steph, he's at in the 22nd position with 25,749 points. To crack the top 10, he'd have to pass Carmelo Anthony at 28,289. We think that's possible?
Yeah. I think it's possible two or three years if he plays at this level. I think he can do it.
All right, we'll just have to wait and see.
Let's take it now from Steph Curry to Steph Curry and Vince Carter to Scotty Barnes. Elias, what's the latest with Scotty?
Yeah, Scotty Barnes, he reaches 5,000 career points. He's joined an exclusive club amongst all-time Raptor greats. The fifth-year forward eclipsed 5,000 career points Saturday night, doing so in 289 games, which was tied with Kyle Lowry for the third fastest to do it in a Raptors jersey, really kind of cementing his legacy here so far in Toronto. Only Vince Carter, who did it in 204 games, Chris Bosh, who did it in 279, have reached 5,000 points faster in a Raptors uniform than Scotty Barnes. So you can say, it's safe to say that Scotty has joined some Raptor greats here and Raptor elites in this club.
Elias, right now for the Raptors, because the Raptors are flying right now. They're playing really well. Would you say right now this is Scotty Barnes' team, or would you say it's Brandon Ingram's team?
No, totally. That's such a tough one because like Scotty's kind of been that pillar with them now for 5 years. You know, they drafted him, but Brandon Ingram's come in this year and kind of taken the stand. I think they both share the team. You can't have one without the other, I think.
I like that. I like that a lot.
Todd, it's time. It's second and goal time.
Hut.
Take it away. You got to do the Todd thing. T-O-D.
Okay, fine. You want it? I'll do it. Here we go. T-O-D-D. Todd.
I want to talk about Bryce Young and the Carolina Panthers. The Panthers beat the Atlanta Falcons last Sunday in a crazy overtime game, 30-27, to help the Panthers improve to 6-5 on the season. Bryce Young in that game, he had a tough game the week before against the Saints, and it was a kind of tough loss for the Panthers there. But they were able to bounce back and beat the Falcons, and Bryce Young broke a franchise record previously held by Cam Newton in the Panthers' win because he threw for 448 yards, averaged 10 yards per passing attempt, and threw three touchdown passes. And this is really good for Bryce Young. We'll see. It'd be interesting to see if he can keep this up against the 49ers, a little connection there. They're playing the 49ers on Monday Night Football, and the Panthers are a game behind the 49ers in the NFC standings. And if you look at it, the Panthers traded Christian McCaffrey back in 2022 to the 49ers, and they used a lot of those picks to trade up and end up getting Bryce Young. So kind of a full circle moment in that game. I think Bryce Young has had some good moments of good football. Like we mentioned last week against Atlanta, he was absolutely fantastic against the Falcons and helped them to win that game. But, you know, looking at Jordan Love so far this season, he's got 15 touchdown passes, which ranks, I believe, in the top 12 in the NFL. So not the greatest, but still 15 touchdown passes and a run-heavy offense. He's only thrown three interceptions, and that's been the biggest kind of knock on Jordan Love throughout his three-year tenure with the Packers is, oh, he's a turnover machine and he throws too many interceptions. Well, this year he's only thrown three interceptions. He's done a good job of taking care of the ball. He ranks in the top 10 as well in passer rating, ranks in the top 5 in QBR. He's been really efficient this year, and I really feel like if the Packers head coach, Matt LaFleur, if he just kind of takes some more of the responsibility and puts it more on Jordan Love and his passing offense, I do think Green Bay's offense can be more consistent than they have been so far this season.
Bryce Young's a young quarterback. I think the more his game matures, the better he's going to be in the future, but he also needs some more, let's say, weapons. McMillan's been good for Carolina, but they're missing that like firepower piece. If they could acquire a wide receiver or two to help Bryce Young, man, I think it would elevate his game so much. In regards to the Green Bay Packers, the past month, it's kind of been a tough stretch. You lost some games to teams that you should have won. But nonetheless, they got a big win versus the New York Giants last Sunday. And hopefully they could build off of that this week against the Minnesota Vikings. And the next 3 weeks for Green Bay is very crucial. They got the Minnesota Vikings, the Detroit Lions, the Chicago Bears. Those are three crucial divisional games that could really determine if they're going to make the playoffs or not.
Todd, I have a question for you. For the Panthers, are they back? They're currently second in their division, right behind the Bucs. We've seen this Panthers team in a long rebuild since Cam Newton.
I would say the Panthers are back to being respectable. I wouldn't say they're back to being like a true, genuine playoff, like Super Bowl contender like they were maybe once or twice with Cam Newton under center. But I feel like they're back to being respectable. And I think that's all you want to see if you're a Panthers fan, right? They've been kind of mired in just disappointment for a long time. And, you know, you get a guy like Bryce Young, you trade all those picks, like I mentioned, to get him. And the first couple of years were looking pretty rough. Up until last season, he was decent down the stretch. But, I mean, to have a winning record at this point in the season, I think it's good for Carolina. And if they can hang around, I mean, they're only half a game behind the Buccaneers for first place in NFC South. So they have a chance to win a division as well.
Alrighty, now let's take it from the gridiron to the diamond. Elias, a nice accomplishment here for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Why don't you tell us about it?
Vlad Jr. wins the inaugural Entertainer of the Year award. Two of the biggest entertainers in the sport, in fact, Guerrero and ace center fielder, also Canadian, Denzel Clark, were honored on Thursday night at the annual MLB awards from the Chelsea Theater. Guerrero took home the inaugural Entertainer of the Year after a season that saw him ink a 14-year contract extension, which of course led the Jays to a World Series, a big part of that. I mean, yeah, like, How can you not love this guy? You know what I'm saying? Like, he's just, I think he's a lot of fun. You can see he's having fun playing on and off the field. I mean, he had his nice little moment there with David Ortiz after the Yankees series. I think this is just one of those kind of fun awards to hand out. And I'm glad that Vladdy, you know, got this award, or received this award.
Nick, why don't you tell us about the Mariners and Josh Naylor?
Yes. So the first off-season splash comes by way of the Seattle Mariners, and that is their re-signing of Canadian first baseman Josh Naylor. Elias, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think, you know, Josh Naylor played a huge part in the Mariners' success this season. And yeah, he was one of the first MLB free agents to be signed. A 5-year deal with Naylor, of course. The Mississauga native acquired by the Mariners at the July trade deadline, and the pairing worked out perfectly down the stretch and into the postseason. So, I mean, the Mariners were very quick to get this deal done. I totally understand why they would be quick, because Naylor would have been a hot commodity if he had stayed on the free agent market a little bit longer. And the Mariners are happy, and I think Naylor is happy as well.
But, Steven, your thoughts on Naylor? Because for me, I think he's a great player, and he's got the swagger, too.
No, I definitely agree with that totally. And honestly, after the Mariners got eliminated in Game 7 of the ALCS versus the Toronto Blue Jays, they asked him about his future, what it looks like if he's going to return to Seattle or, you know, test free agency and go somewhere else. And he said, being a Seattle Mariner, it's the most comfortable he's ever felt on a team in his career. So after he said that, it seemed that a contract extension was just inevitable. You know, as last season, Josh Naylor hit for a .295 batting average to go along with 20 home runs and 92 RBIs, including his time, obviously, with the Arizona Diamondbacks, where he was traded from Arizona to Seattle. And one reason he stated why he wanted to return to Seattle was to handle unfinished business after, obviously, the disappointing playoff exit in Game 7 of the Toronto Blue Jays in the ALCS. So Josh Naylor got $92.5 million, if I remember correctly.
Yep. 5-year deal.
What do you think Pete Alonso is going to get?
I'd say more. Yeah. I'd say maybe.
I completely agree.
I'd say over the, if it was a 5-year deal as well, I'd probably put him at around 100.
Yeah, I think he surpasses 100 for sure.
He's a slugger, that
okay,
guy.
Okay, what's Bo getting? What's Bo getting?
300.
Even
4. I say 4.
How many years?
It's got to be long term then. It's got to be 7-8, I'd say.
So I think
400 over 8 years?
Okay, maybe 8 plus. Let's say 8 plus.
So I think he could get that in the open market, but if he wants to stay with the Blue Jays, it's got to be in the 5 to 6 year range and within $280 million. You look at the Jays pipeline, they just drafted Jojo Parker, who's a shortstop. So unless Bo is willing to play second base, you can't sign him for over 9 years. Also, unless you plan on trading Jojo Parker.
It's a good point. Going back to Naylor for a second, though, obviously was traded to the Mariners on July the 24th of 2025. On September 19th, Naylor hit his 20th homer of the season, becoming the 14th first baseman in Major League history with at least 20 home runs and 20 stolen bases in a season. On September 26th, Naylor stole his 30th base, making him the 4th Major League first baseman with a 20 home run, 30 stolen base season. And interestingly, Naylor's successful base stealing came despite being one of the slowest runners in baseball. He was only caught stealing twice in 2025, both before the trade to Seattle. And just a really great season. And as we mentioned, Naylor became a free agent following the end of this 2025 season, and on November 17th was re-signed by the Mariners. Last thoughts on baseball.
Who's next? Who's getting signed next?
Bichette,
okay. Elias, Steven?
I don't know. I think personally, Bichette's going to wait this one out.
I
think he's going to really take some time here. I don't know. Maybe we see Kyle Tucker make a decision.
No, he's going to wait it out.
You think so?
Yeah. I see a pitcher going next. If it's Diaz or
King.
King. Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
We'll have to wait and see. They're taking it from the diamond to the field, the soccer field, that is, or football, if you want to be technical here.
The pitch.
The pitch. Taking it to the pitch. Taking it from the diamond to the pitch. Anning, why don't you tell us the latest? Because some historic moments here for some national teams in relation to qualifying for the FIFA 2026 World Cup. Anning, fill us in on the details.
Absolutely. Yesterday, 42 out of the 48 teams have finished their qualifying campaigns. 42 teams are in. Out of those, some notable results include Curaçao becomes the smallest country to qualify for the World Cup. It's a tiny island just off the coast of Venezuela. It has a population of 150,000 people, which is half as much as Iceland, which was the previous smallest country to qualify. It's an incredible opportunity for the people of Curaçao and their national team.
Absolutely. And these qualifying games are so, so action-packed and great, great to watch. Some really great soccer coming out of these qualifying games.
Absolutely. And, you know, it was a really remarkable feat here for Haiti. Ended a 51-year World Cup drought with a victory over Nicaragua, as Anning mentioned. You know, remarkable there. First time since, I believe, was it 1974 that they have gone in. So that's going to be, you know, really special there to see for Haiti there as well. And then obviously taking it to Curaçao. I mean, so great to see Curaçao obviously getting in the smallest population of a team ever to make a World Cup. And, you know, there's a lot of teams that we're going to get a glimpse of here that we haven't been accustomed to seeing much of in past times in the World Cup, the likes of Uzbekistan, Jordan. So we'll definitely see what we can make of that there. I believe Curaçao is a population of only 156,000, only slightly more than Lethbridge, Altidore. So, I mean, that says something there for sure. Todd, what do you make of, you know, these feel-good stories here of maybe some footballing nations that haven't really experienced much at the World Cup stage before?
I think it's awesome. I think it's absolutely awesome and amazing, especially, you know, for, you know, a lot of these smaller countries to be able to be on the biggest stage, right? It's literally the biggest stage in all of sports, right? Not just soccer, sports in general. So I think it's awesome for these countries to be able to showcase their talent and their abilities. And it's going to be awesome and fun, honestly, to watch them play, I think.
Anning, I'll pose this question for you because you'll have the last say here. With regards to Haiti and Curaçao, which of the two surprised you more with regards to their qualification?
I'd say, that's a hard one. I'd say Curaçao, probably.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I remember 2 years ago, Dick Advocaat got hired on, said that he was going to bring Curaçao to the World Cup, and then we all laughed at him, but he didn't, and he's laughing at us now.
Eddie, that was a great episode, guys. That was really, really fun. Great to be back in the studio. We've been kind of shuffling around with spaces and studios and things of that sort of the last couple of weeks, and it was great to finally be back in the studio and chatting it up.
This was awesome. I mean, we had, six of us on the mic. I can't think of, it's been a long time since we've had six people on the mic. Like, I'm thinking back to a couple iterations of Spirited Sports when we've had six people. We have two overtime units here. So this is great. Nick, your thoughts on the camaraderie here with the full house?
Great stuff. It's great stuff. Always is.
A man, a few words. You gotta love it.
Alrighty. That will do it for the end of this episode of Spirited Sports. Guys, thank you so much for joining us, to our guests. Great job today. A big thank you to our sports correspondent, Adam Faradella, for a great contribution to today's episode as well. That'll do it for the end of this episode of Spirited Sports. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time.